any live performance of a Mahler symphony is a commemoration, if not an outright celebration. Leave it to CCM's Mark Gibson to make it a Mahler marathon. Two symphonies over the course of an afternoon and an evening. Welcome back, Maestro.
Thanks so much for having me back, Anne.
What's the occasion? We commemorated the centenary of Mahler's death in 2011.
Great music needs no occasion, and when we have the forces to do a great project, like we did a few years ago with the Concert Turandot, we put those forces together and we are able to come up with projects that no one else can do because we have two great orchestras, we have so many great singers, and we have the facilities. From that, I know that my colleague Annunziata Tomato had wanted to do a Mahler 4. It's been over a decade since I've done the Mahler 3. It seemed obvious to try to do them at the same time because they are essentially the same piece. They were born of the same fruit. They evolved together, and only late in Mahler's development did he separate them into two distinct works. I actually call the project Stairway to Heaven, which is essentially what Mahler wrote. He wrote two symphonies that are about humankind's progress from the earthly life, Das irdische Leben, to the heavenly life, Das himmlische Leben, as described in these two symphonies.
The marathon begins with Mahler's Symphony No. 4 in G major, performed by CCM's Concert Orchestra. And this lovely work is often described as a small symphony by Mahler standards. Why?
Small in the sense that it doesn't have trombones, it doesn't have the massive forces. It is his shortest symphony, along with the first. So in that sense, it is not as massive, also more intimate. The melodic material seems to be almost chamber music-like on occasion. It has a very intimate quality. So it's small in that sense. It's still about a 60-minute symphony. It's not a small play or a small listen.
It also has a lovely soprano solo at the conclusion. And who will be the soloist?
We have a wonderful soprano, Chabrelle Williams, who has worked with me before in this past summer in Così fan tutte and has sung on the main stage at CCM Opera. She sang the Strauss 4 last year, in fact. Beautiful soprano. She's going to be great and is perfect for her.
And Annunziata Tamara will be conducting?
She, in fact, will not be conducting. She is on leave this semester, and for a variety of reasons, I ended up being the lucky guy on the podium.
So it really is a Mahler marathon.
and it's also a little marathon for me. I should probably have paramedics standing by. It turns out that the problem of doing the third and fourth symphonies the same day is not the symphonies themselves, but the dress rehearsals the day or the 2 days before. So that has required some coordination so that I didn't die.
In the Symphony No. 4, what can a first-time listener expect to hear?
Curiously, the first thing that one hears in the fourth symphony are sleigh bells. Just a little what we call an ostinato, a repeated figure in some flutes. That derives from one of the songs from the series Des Knaben Wunderhorn, the youth's magic horn. And this song, from which the opening of the fourth is taken, is called Das irdische Leben, the earthly life. It's a little ominous, perhaps, and it isn't until this weird little introduction that the first violins have a very, very sweet tune that kind of says, there, there, it's going to be okay. So it is as though there was a brief moment of looking back on the earthly life before we enter this more heavenly realm. That's the first thing one hears, is this little reminiscence of the earthly life. And we will perform that song. One of the Wunderhorn songs before the Fourth Symphony will be that song in particular.
Well, from this small symphony, you move on to the longest symphony in the traditional repertoire, Mahler Symphony No. 3 in D minor. And you're going to be leading the CCM Philharmonia and a host of others. It's an awesome sonic feast.
It is a truly great experience. It'll be my third. I've had wonderful, wonderful performances at Eastman and in my first years at CCM with the Third Symphony. It is a celebratory event and a transformative one for our students and for our community.
Tell us about the forces for this performance, because it's not just the Philharmonia.
The Third Symphony will have the Philharmonia, the University of Cincinnati Women's Chorus, all of the women who can sing at CCM, and the Bel Canto Chorus from the Cincinnati Children's Choir, directed by Robin Lana. So there will be a lot of women and a lot of kids, not just on stage, but in the balconies. The fifth movement, the penultimate movement of the symphony, calls for this chorus from on high. I should say, Anne, that the fourth movement kind of describes the hangover from a drunken debauch set from Nietzsche's Zaspec Zarathustra. The soloist, the mezzo-soprano in this case, sings a kind of very haunting, very almost hallucinogenic Where Am I kind of song that is very difficult to pin down, and it kind of ends, and the next thing you hear is this voices from on high, which is a miraculous effect of Mahler's.
And who's the mezzo?
The mezzo-soloist for the Third Symphony is a wonderful singer, an artist diploma student at CCM, Leah de Gruel, who just recently sang the mezzo part in the Verdi Requiem with the CCM Philharmonia.
Mahler once again used a text from the collection of German folk poems, Das Knaben Wunderhorn, the youth's magic horn. Mm-hmm. But as you say, he also included that one text by Nietzsche. So that's quite a juxtaposition.
Yes, the Third Symphony draws from so many different forces. The monumental quality of the piece is emblematic of the monumental quality of the time, the pre-World War I zeitgeist of anything is possible, heroism lives, the louder the better, the longer the better. Schoenberg's Gurlieder comes from the same period. But the Third Symphony ends with a rather loud, large sonic event, but it ends essentially with a prayer in search of heaven. It's a truly remarkable, long and deeply felt sonic prayer.
It's also a personal kind of odyssey because every movement is titled. The first movement is what the earth tells me, and so on,
yes.
What living creatures tell me, and the last movement is what love tells me.
Indeed, Mahler wrestled for a long time with whether or not he should keep these titles that he had written for the movements. Ultimately, he took them out. I personally find Mahler just said far too much about his own music, and his music, you know as well as I, speaks very much for itself. The image that I've tried to share with the orchestra is one of paintings of Marc Chagall, for example, which has a fantastic quality, extremely colorful, glimpses of heaven, glimpses of miracles, and glimpses of the macabre as well. These images I've shared with the orchestras as we begin our preparations of both Mahler symphonies.
As I said earlier, it's truly a journey from primal earthly forces to the power of love, and it must be an absolutely overwhelming experience to conduct it.
First of all, I am so blessed to have not one but two great orchestras in top form, I have to say. The Philharmonia has outdone itself this year. We just came off a Randy Edelman concert and they destroyed the place. But I think everybody's eyes and hearts and minds are on March 2nd on this tremendous Mahler event.
And so it starts at 4 o'clock and goes until...
Yes, we start at 4 o'clock with excerpts from Das Knaben Wunderhorn, the Fourth Symphony, we take a dinner break, pray to the Mahler gods again, and come back for the Third Symphony.
Well, it's an odyssey absolutely worth joining. Thank you so much, Mark Gibson, who's been my guest. Mark Gibson is the Director of Orchestral Studies at CCM. The Mahler Marathon begins on Saturday, March the 2nd at 4 p.m. with the Symphony No. 4, followed by Mahler's Third Symphony at 7 p.m. You can find out more by going to our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Ann Ehrenstein.